Welcome to the Surrender, Taking Direction, Not Taken Prisoner workshop of WCNA 34. My name is Mike B. from Canada, and I'm an addict. And this is a wonderful convention. Welcome to people here that are for the first time, and welcome to those that have been to a few. I have a few announcements before we start. Volunteers. As you probably know, we could not host WCNA without the willingness of our members to contribute their time. With that in mind, we are in need of more volunteers to work the merchandise today. Please, if you have a few hours to spare, come to Room 6, Merchandise, to help out. Thank you. Badges. Please note that members must wear their badges to enter the convention center beyond the registration area. And please, please be careful that people have been losing their badges from the clips, so a lot of people are tying them up in some way or another. Lunch, you don't have to leave the convention center. Lunch is being served beginning at 11 a.m. at the Tides in the lobby area and the food court on the terrace outside Ballroom 20 in the upper level. Smoking around exits. We have identified the entrance in Front Hall A and F as non-smoking entrances. Smokers, please do not use the sidewalk area outside Hall A and outside Hall F to smoke. Those are designated non-smoking area. I noticed they wrote that twice. Entertainment. We still have concert tickets available, and you can purchase them in the registration area. That's for Vanilla Fudge and Blue Oyster Cult. Tonight's dance starts at 10 p.m. in the Grand Hyatt Manchester Ballroom, and you need your registration badge for the dance. Photos, videos, and social media. We recognize that it is a common practice for members to take photos and videos at any events and to post them on social networks. We do not believe this to be in conflict with our traditions, so long as they are for the enjoyment of our members and are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from WCNA 34. Okay, can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the serenity prayer. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And at this time, I've asked Jeff L. from Oklahoma City to read Who is an Addict?
My name's Jeff. Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We lived to use and used to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you, Jeff. And at this time, I'd like to ask Nancy Kay from Orange County to read What is the NA Program?
My name is Nancy. I'm a grateful addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a program, is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues. No pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
And I've asked JC from Delray Beach, Florida, to read a portion of our literature.
Hi, good morning, family. JC Attic. Okay, our experience shows that it is necessary for us to be willing to do anything it takes to obtain a precious gift of recovery. In recovery, we will be introduced to spiritual principles such as the surrender, honesty, and acceptance required for the first step. If we faithfully practice these principles, they will transform our perceptions and the way we live our lives. When we first begin to practice these principles, they may seem very unnatural to us. It may take a deliberate effort on our part for us to make an honest admission called in the first step. Even though we are admitting our addiction, we still wonder if this program really works. Acceptance of our addiction is something that goes beyond our conscious admission. This is my first time reading this. When we accept our addiction, we gain the hope of recovery. We begin to believe on a deep level that we can recover. We begin to let go of our doubts and truly come to terms with our disease. We become open to change and we surrender. As we work the first step, we find that surrender is not what we thought it was. In the past, we probably thought of surrender as something that only the weak and cowardly people do. We saw only two choices: either keep fighting to control our using, or just to cave in completely and let our lives fall to pieces. We felt we were at battle to control our using, and that if we surrendered, the drugs would win. In recovery, we find that the surrender involves letting go of ourselves and our reservations, our recovery, and being willing to try a different approach to living life. The process of surrender is extremely personal, personal for each one of us. Only we as individuals know when we've done. We stress the importance of surrender, for it is the very process that enables us to recover. When we surrender, we know in our hearts that we've had enough. We're tired of fighting. And the relief comes over us as we finally realize that the struggle is over. Whew. All right. Thank you. That's
it. Thank you, JC. Okay, at this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Denise B. from Connecticut.
I'm an addict. My name is Denise. Grateful to be clean today, and boy, what a privilege this is to come in and speak at a world convention. A little overwhelming at the moment, and I don't know. You know, when I got clean, if you all asked me to write on a piece of paper what I would expect in my life 16 years later, this wouldn't have been on that piece of paper. That's the reality of it. And what I share with you today is my life. I don't share theory. I learned that here. I need to move this a little bit. Is that better? If y'all can't hear me, let me know. My mouth is pretty big. Ask the people in my life that are closest to me. And I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share with you all today, because it is a privilege. It really is that somebody believes in me, and somebody believes that I can carry a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. And what I share with you all today, you might not like, but I'm sure you might be able to identify with it. Because if you're sitting in this chair, you've probably been in a lot of similar situations that I've been in. And, you know, how I ended up being asked to speak, you never know how God's going to work in your life. And, you know, I've had the privilege of speaking at our convention in Connecticut. I come from the Hartford area in Connecticut. And, yeah, woohoo! And, you know, and I have a home group that I go to. It's on Monday night in Windsor Locks. If you're ever up in the Windsor Locks area of Connecticut, you'll see me there on a Monday night. And so I've had the privilege, you know, to share in my area. And how this all transpired was my husband got an email asking me to speak, you know. And I'm like, wow, how'd that happen? And, of course, I thought my grand sponsor had something to do with it because she's from the California area, you know. And so I ran into her husband one day at a birthday party. And just trying to keep my eye on the time here. And I said, oh, did Carlene have something to do with me being asked to speak? He said, no. I gave the committee a bunch of names from people that were going to be here from Connecticut, and somehow they chose mine. To me, that's my God working in my life. And to me, you know, just recently this year I lost my mother, and my mother was able to see me get clean. And I truly believe that she had a part to do with that, too. I have my Kleenex ready because I have a feeling it might be a little emotional today. So when I got the topic, surrender, taking direction, not taking prisoners, you know, I'm going to share a little bit with you when I first got here and where my surrender was. And now here I am 16 years later and where my surrender is. And I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous not because I wanted to. You know, it's funny when I think about taking direction. I don't know about you guys. When I first started using, I didn't know how. You know, someone had to show me how to mix a drink. You know, and I picked up alcohol when I was 11 years old. And, you know, I realized over the years the progression of the disease. And then someone had to show me how to smoke a joint. And I remember having to learn how to roll a joint. One of my girlfriends sat me down with a pound of weed. And back then, you got a four-finger ounce, you know, not this little stuff like this. And she gave me a bag, a package of zigzags, and she said, roll away, right? But I was willing. See, because when I picked up that, you know, when I picked up that first drug, it got me outside of myself. I was an overweight kid. I grew up in a military family. We moved around a lot. I was the baby, but I never felt like I belonged. I never felt like I was good enough, you know. And then, you know, the progression of the disease, you know, someone taught me how to sniff a line, and someone taught me how to, you know, cook some coke. And I thought it was the substance that was getting me in trouble, you know. I didn't realize that I had this thing called the disease of addiction. And then I started doctor shop, and I met up with this man, and he was older, and I found him very attractive. And, you know, I was willing to compromise my values, you know, to be with him. And he taught me how to doctor shop. And at 18 years old, I started doctor shopping. And some of you might be familiar with codeine and Dordans, but, you know, that's where the disease of my disease of addiction really started to spiral out of control. And then someone taught me how to shoot a bag of dope. And that's where the disease of addiction brought me. It brought me living in a motel behind the job that I worked with. I work in the food business, you know, and if any of you have ever worked in the food business or still do today, using goes hand in hand. You know, so I was working in this restaurant, and I was using, and I was in such deep denial that I didn't think anybody else knew because all my family was back in Connecticut, you know. And if I didn't have that bag of dope in me, I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. You know, so I remember, you know, how I ended up getting back to Connecticut, you know, called my folks up and said, hey, can you send me some money for a U-Haul? See, by that time, my family had finally gotten smart. And they said, we won't send you the money, but we'll send you the U-Haul. So they sent me a U-Haul. We packed up all our worldly belongings. You know, how much can you have living in a motel? You know, I was washing my clothes in a sink. I was stealing toilet paper from other bathrooms, you know, because all my money went to getting high. So I ended up back in Connecticut, and I thought that my husband at the time was the problem. So I thought if he went into treatment, I would be okay, because he was the problem. And I really, you know, he went away, and I continued to use. And my using really spiraled out of control. And I remember a week before, you know, and I used to say I made the decision, but today I know God made the decision for me. My mother confronted me, and she said, Denise, if you have a problem, I'm here to help you. I had just copped. I didn't want to deal with her. I was 33 years old, living back at home, you know, a marriage that was, like, totally dysfunctional. And I'm like, no, Ma, I'm good. I'm good. I went upstairs. I got high, and I just remember that pain in her eyes. Like, my parents thought I was going to die. You know, and the last day that I used, I don't know about you guys, I can remember a lot of firsts, you know, and go with where I'm going here with that a lot of firsts. I remember the first time I used, right? I remember the last time I used. There were a lot of years in between that I don't remember, you know. So that last day, it was an Easter Sunday, and I tried a cop at 7 o'clock in the morning, and there was nobody around, and my family finally said, you know what? You either go get help or you got to go. They finally had gotten to that point where they were tired of watching me die. And so I, you know, came up with this decision, well, I'm going to go into detox. So I go into detox, and luckily, you know, I was able to get into that facility. Addicts are less fortunate today trying to get into detox facilities, you know. So I went into that detox, and I thought I was just going to do my 5 days of detox. I didn't know anything about surrender, but see, the surrender process had started for me without me even being aware of it. And I went into that detox, and I was miserable. Ugh, I stunk. I couldn't stand being in my skin. And back then, they gave you those little smiley slippers. That's all I could remember looking at was those little smiley slippers. And I don't know about y'all, I wasn't smiling in detox. You know, and I thought I was going to do my 5 days of detox and get out, and I was going to be good. Well, God had another plan for me, and I got the privilege to stay in that facility longer. And thank God I did, because I heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I would go to the H&I meeting because there were guys there. You know, I remember my Latin lover in treatment, his name was Pablo. And, you know, back then, and I share this because trust me, it's not just the women that do shit like this. You guys can identify with it, too. You know, looking for that outside stuff to make me feel better. And this is what I thought about myself back then. I'm having sex with a guy in a broom closet in treatment. So, needless to say, I didn't get kicked out. We didn't get caught. And I haven't seen Pablo since. Because I don't think his intentions were staying clean. And so, you know, I heard some things while I was in that treatment facility. I heard that, you know, when you get out, you go to a meeting. You know, when you get out, you do 90 meetings in 90 days. You get a female sponsor. I was just like, I don't know about that one. You know, you get phone numbers. You know, I don't know. Like I said, I've been clean for a little over 16 years. And when I got clean, I had to go up and ask women for their phone numbers. They didn't pass the schedule around, you know, and give me a list of numbers. Because I wasn't like scared to ask a dope dealer for his phone number. Now all of a sudden I get clean and I'm afraid to ask somebody for their phone number, you know. And I wanted what these people had. These people were coming in on a Friday night, and they were sharing this message of recovery and this promise of freedom, you know, that I never had to use again. And I believed them a little bit. And I remember the day that I truly surrendered to the disease of addiction. I was in treatment, and I got my little four-hour pass, right? And everybody else was going out and doing other things. I decided to go to a meeting. And I still had a set of works. I hadn't turned over all my paraphernalia to my family, you know. And I still had a set of works. And went upstairs to get some clothes because I had to look good in treatment, you know. Mind you, the woman that stands here before you today is not the same woman. I can be that same woman in a split second. Trust me, you know. But I was shooting two bundles of dope a day and I weighed 100 pounds heavier. Go figure, right? So, you know, I went upstairs and I got that set of works and I handed them to my mother. And that's the day that I realized that I can't use successfully. I will die if I make that decision to use again. So I started going to meetings, got a sponsor, did service. And today, those are all the same things that I do today. You know, I got a home group and surrendering. You know, when life is good, it's easy to surrender. But when some shit hits the fan, see how willing you are to surrender. You know, so I'm going to meetings, I get started on some step work, and what I have to say is I recover here and here only. I don't go anywhere else for my recovery. I do step work one-on-one with a sponsor. That's the way I was taught. You know, I was taught to get to meetings early and stay late, and that's what I do. You know, to reach out to that newcomer, give my phone number out, those types of things. And, you know, I surrendered to the drugs, and I used to hear my sponsor talk about the insidiousness of the disease. I didn't understand what that meant. Today, I understand the insidiousness of the disease. It waits. It's very patient, you know, and it can get me when I'm the most vulnerable, and it can get me to think that using is more attractive than staying clean. See, I had a couple years clean. And some things were going on, and, you know, my disease will say, keep it a secret. Don't share that with anybody. What are they going to think? And I was going along my business thinking, I'm okay. And the thought of shooting a bag of dope was getting more and more attractive. And it was through the grace of God that, you know, I went to my home group at the time, and I was going to share some real, like, enlightening stuff, you know. And God had another plan for me. And I got honest. And I let my home group know what was going on. And other members came up to me and they thanked me. You know, because when you're new, like I look back to when I was a newcomer and where I was with surrender, it was like, go to meetings, don't use. See, now we put some time together and responsibility comes into the picture. And sometimes I don't want to be responsible. But that's what I wanted when I got here, was to be responsible. You know, so through my recovery, there's been really, really good stuff, and there's been some challenging stuff. And when I look at taking direction, I need to have an open mind, and I need to have some willingness. I'm not one of those ones that can remember the literature offhand and things like that. My brain's pretty shot. I just remember, I think it's We Do Recover, and one of our pieces of literature, and I love our literature, it says, I cannot graft a new idea on a closed mind. And how true is that? You know, so I need to learn to take some direction, because if I don't take some direction, I'm going to be starting to take some, like my husband said this morning, some hostages, you know. So I have a sponsor, and I get honest with that sponsor, you know. And there's been times that she has said things to me that I haven't liked. Like I remember, I do H&I, that's one of the ways that I serve. And I remember I was doing more H&I meetings than I was regular meetings. H&I is not a regular meeting, that's what I was taught. You know, we're carrying the message. So going to more H&I meetings and going to regular meetings, what did I have to offer to those people in those facilities? So my sponsor said to me, you know what? You need to tell me what meetings you're going to. And I forget how many years I had clean by that time. And I was like, how dare she? Like, really? You know? And she was right. I had no business doing more H&I meetings than I did regular meetings. So I had to tell her what meetings I was going to. I've never not wanted to go to meetings. I love this fellowship. And you ask the people that are closest to me, I'm very enthusiastic and I can get on my soapbox sometimes about it. And I might today a little bit. I sponsor women today and I hopefully lead by example. But I never tell them to do something that I haven't done or that I'm not willing to do myself. You know, and my sponsor taught me that. And just like somebody had to show me how to use, somebody needs to show me how to recover. And not just through my sponsorship and not just through the people that are in my network, but people that I come in contact with on a daily basis. You know, I've learned through doing step work that 12 steps tells us that we practice these principles in all our affairs. Because I can talk a good game in a meeting. How am I living it when I get out there? That's the true attraction of this program, is how am I living it when I go out there? Do I go to work on time? And am I doing my job? Those types of things. Somewhere along, after I had finished my sixth step, I realized that some things needed to change for me. One of them was my job. One of them was my job, and one of them was I had to do something about my weight. You guys taught me that I can go out and get help out there, right? And the 12 steps and the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous help me, but sometimes I need a little extra help, you know, because I realized that my weight was killing me. My weight was killing me. That was the reality. So, you know, I took some direction. I talked to some other people that were in recovery, and they guided me, and, you know, I started to do something about my health, and today I work for in that area. I help people. And that's pretty powerful stuff. And let me tell you, my disease can manifest itself in a lot of ways, and food can be one of them. You know, if I'm looking to get outside of myself, I can turn to that Krispy Kreme donut. You know, I grew up down south, and there's something about Krispy Kreme donuts. But I realized that the disease can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And when I'm caught in that disease frame of mind, fortunately, I have people in my life that I can run shit by. See, the insidious of the disease will tell me, don't share that with anybody. They don't get it. But y'all get it. You know where I'm coming from. You know? So learning to take direction, I get good with it some days, and other days I'm not. Just the last couple years, I'm going to share with surrender. You know, and I've learned that I can say that I accept shit, you know, that surface acceptance. But where's that deep surrender and where's that deep acceptance? You know, and when I'm all caught up, I know that I'm not accepting and I'm not surrendering and my life becomes unmanageable. I've learned that. I am no longer a victim. I cannot blame anybody else for stuff that's going on in my life. I would like to blame everybody else. But the reality is Narcotics Anonymous has given me that freedom of choice. And with each step, I get a different level of choice and a different level of freedom if I choose to use it, you know. So over the last few years, life has been a little challenging. My husband had to have surgery, and I had to have surgery, and there were narcotics in our house. My first sponsor relapsed on pain medication. Sometimes we have to take pain medication here. That's a reality, you know. And I learned from her that I need to ask people that have experience with taking medication so I can get through it clean. Because I don't know about you, my body doesn't know the difference between me taking it and it being prescribed by a doctor. It just likes it. And we were able to get through it clean. And one of the things that what happened is I had 29 perks left. Right, because I only had to take one. That was it, one. And I had to get rid of them. I'm like, I could sell them and make some money. You know, I could sell them and make some money. You know, because my best thinking will get me in a jackpot sometimes. And it was hard flushing those bad boys down the toilet. Now we don't flush them down the toilet anymore because they mess up the environment, you know. And then it wasn't even a year after that, my husband had a stroke. And I don't know if some of you I know are in relationships to another addict, and boy, oh boy. Talk about taking some direction. Not always easy. And I remember, you know, he was complaining about a headache. And I'm saying to myself, it's a fucking headache, man. I get migraines all the time. Deal with it. You know? And so I feed him some lunch and I go for a walk. Because I've learned to take care of myself here. You know, I exercise. I eat right. You know, I try to get some good sleep. And so I went for a walk, and I came back, and bam, the ambulance is in my driveway. I'm like, what the heck? Next thing I know, they're telling me they're bringing to the hospital. See, and I've built relationships in here in Narcotics Anonymous because I've learned to take direction from people, and I don't push everybody away. And my friends picked me up, and they brought me to the hospital, and things just change really quickly. You know, we have this moment right here. This is what we have right here because we never know when it's going to change. And in that split second, my life changed. And that's where I am today. I am struggling with surrendering to the fact that our lives have changed because he had this stroke. And it makes me mad sometimes, you know. And the doctor walked in and they said, you know, he's got a bleed on his brain and we don't think he's going to make it. Want to talk about having to surrender? It's being so powerless. When we talk about our hearts aching, my heart was fucking aching. He survived it through the grace of God. You know, God's not done with him yet. But it's been challenging. It's been a challenging few years. You know, this is our first vacation that we've gone on since his stroke. And let me tell you, thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for network. Because I like to tell him, he's sitting in the room. I like to tell him a few things, but I've learned that my mouth can cause a lot of harm. And when I start spewing venom, I don't want to have to clean that stuff up. I've done some nine-step stuff, you know, and I don't want to have to go in and clean it up. Because once those words are out of my mouth, I can't take them back. Can't take it back. And, you know, today I don't want to cause harm. I don't intentionally want to cause harm today, you know. And like I said, my mother passed away this past May, and because of Narcotics Anonymous, I was able to be there for her. She got sick, and she went pretty quick. And, you know, I don't know if you guys can relate to this. When you feel like you're in the deepest despair, when life is going on, and you're like, why, God? You can't see, like, the positive and the gift that you're going to get from that situation when you're in it. But today, I can take a look at the gift that I got. I was able to be a daughter to my mom. Because she was able to die at home, and I was responsible for certain times of being with her and giving her her liquid morphine and not taking it myself. Because if I was using, I would have been stealing her medication. I was skanky when I walked in here, you know, and because of some guidance and taking some direction, I don't have to live my life that way. And it's still difficult. I miss her. I miss her. And I've learned here through you all, through my predecessors, and then those newcomers walking in, that, you know what, it's no better out there. It's actually worse. You know, and that using isn't my solution. We can get through anything in this fellowship clean. There's no reason why I have to use Satan. There's no reason none of us in this room have to use. Because how many of us know people that made that decision to go out and use and they're dead today? That's the reality. When I make that decision to go out and use, jails, institutions, or death. And today, for this moment, I am truly grateful. And I don't have to go out there and make myself do some things that compromise my values and morals if I choose not to, you know. So learning to take direction, when I do it, life is a whole lot sweeter. And when I don't do it, my life becomes unmanageable. And, you know, it talks about taking prisoners. You know, I can take prisoners outside of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, like in my job environment, when I think people should do their job the way I think it should be done, you know. And those kinds of things. So we learn to take it out there. And today, I can take myself prisoner up here in my head and through my defects of character. And when I do that, life isn't real nice. You know, let me just check out what time it is here because I don't want to go over on Mark. So it's wow. Beyond my wildest dreams to be at a world convention and sharing with you my life. Because that's what I learned we do here in Narcotics Anonymous. We share our lives with one another, you know. And if this is your first World Convention, enjoy it. Get a little sleep. I learned that early on, you know. I learned not to have expectations, you know, when it comes to events like this. Just kind of go with the flow. Because of some step work and having a relationship with a God and a sponsor, I can sit with myself today. Like yesterday, I went to Coronado by myself. How cool is that? Like, I'm pretty comfortable in my skin today. And I was able to go over there and hang out at the beach and get a little sun, maybe a little too much sun, you know. And then come back and, you know, get in some meetings and go to the marathon and those types of things. So I don't know. I learned early on that a grateful addict won't use. I've looked at my gratitude over the years. And one of the things that I always think about is today I have toilet paper to wipe my ass. Because there are a lot of days I didn't, you know. I raised a son in recovery. He's not my biological son, but I raised him. And I had to go to you all to get help to do that because I don't have children of my own. I wanted to kill him. And now he's a wonderful adult. He's respectful. He's responsible. And because I stayed with it and I asked for some help, because really when you talk about direction, it's learning to ask for help. I was able to ask you guys, how do you do this? How do you be a parent? And people were willing to help me, you know. So over the years, the surrender has changed. I learned a lot of things. There's still a lot to learn. I have wonderful relationships. People come and go in my life. And I truly believe that God has a plan for me. And if I can appreciate what God has right in front of me, oh, the moment is just so much more enjoyable. You know, so hopefully somebody got something out of what I shared today. I am truly grateful to be here. My name is Denise. I'm an addict. Thanks.
Thank you, Denise. Now I'd like to call on our second speaker, Mark L. from San Jose, California.
Thank you for showing up. I know you had a lot of options this afternoon. My name is Mark. I'm an addict. And using for me was like talking. Not hard to get me to start. The difficulty was teaching me how to quit. So thank you for the conscientious part of the time you didn't take, Denise. I have a lot in common with you, actually. And I liked what you had to say about surrender. I will say this, that... For me, Narcotics Anonymous has allowed me to make a living because it taught me how to speak.
in 1988, it allowed me to continue living because it showed me how to listen.
The definition of consistency is doing the same thing over and over and seeing healthy results. I consistently had to surrender as a kid to behavior in a family that was dysfunctional and confusing. I surrendered to chemicals and products and behaviors. I have no trouble with the concept of surrender. I thought when they asked me to do this, which is always a privilege, here's the irony of today. It's easy to feel important up here because we have a story. This program is foolproof, but your view today is not as good as mine. See, you're looking at the fool. I'm looking at the proof. This never fails. It will never fail. I'm sorry you have to look at me for as long as you do. But I love seeing you. I was confused a little bit when they gave me the topic about surrender. You know, take it. They're very clever titles. But they're missing a few. I always thought it would be fun to be able to name the titles in the program. For me, words are what I do. I'm allowed to create sentences and stories and pictures mentally or visually on film because God gave me a gift of language. Language protected me from the abuse and the intolerance and the misdirection that I got from parents at home who had no program. They had no information. My GPS system is wrong. The whole day in my head sounds like this: recalculating. Recalculating. Sometimes they're recalculating. You're calculating when possible, make an illegal or legal U-turn. You don't have time to make a legal U-turn. Just turn around. Turn around. First thought wrong. Turn around. And yet I look like this when I'm doing it. Hey. Hey, what's up? Yeah. Good. Me. Good. All good. Recalculating. You didn't have to show me how to be unsuccessful or unhealthy or disrespectful or untruthful. It came naturally to this addict. So this program's perfect for me. But my first thought is wrong. When I got the program, I like to look at the titles. I like to see how we've created language. And I speak a bunch of different languages. They're all English. But I speak G and H and I and R and X behind the wheel of a car on the highway. And I speak I speak Disney, and I speak Normie. I speak all those languages now. At 52 years old, I speak a bunch of different languages because I've learned how to use my adaptability as an addict to be interpretive out there and anonymous. And anonymous for me in the real world means you're not going to know my first thought. You're not going to know my first 10 if they're wrong. Sometimes my first 15, not your business, and they're progressively worse. Sometimes it takes me 25 minutes to get to this one. Shh. Recalculating. But I thought how fun it would be to name some of the workshops at this phenomenal world convention. And, you know, like loneliness. The reward for being right every day, all day. Hello, party one. Here we come. Yeah. Or loving the newcomer, this time with your clothes on. Do that. And from a distance, you know. Or alcohol is a drug. Excuse me, like a marriage on the rocks, please. Make it a double. I love the ability to craft an idea or a mental image out of language God gave us to share. Now, as a kid, you couldn't get me to talk. I talked to myself. And the hardest part about that was I didn't know what to say to me, because solitude was sanctuary in a home like mine. I'm not blaming anybody. That's my second favorite sound in the whole world.
can relate.
My first? What was your first thought? I wasn't going to tell you because I was afraid I'd tear up, but it's the sound of my boy's feet in the morning.
Coming down the hall to wake up his dad or his mom.
Usually it's his dad, little bastard that he is. That is my favorite sound. Here they come. He's safe and we're going to begin another day. See, my dad was a guy that would hit you so hard, you would black out. And then he would continue to beat you because he was offended you couldn't stick around for the full abuse. That was extraordinarily painful to watch for my three brothers and my sister who were all younger than I was. But I knew it happened to me. I was not separated from the insanity that is a dysfunctional family that does the best it can and it just sucks. I've forgiven my dad years ago through step work, and it wasn't because I was spiritual, it wasn't because I decided to surrender my will and my life. It was laziness. I got tired of carrying around the weight of his ignorance on my back all day. That's a lot of work. It gets heavy walking around with your stuff on me. And there's a lot of stuff just in this room. You know, it would take me 45 minutes just to read a list of names of people in this room that I can see right now that have affected me. Because that's what happened when I joined Narcotics Anonymous. Connection, direction, affection. In that order. Wasn't direction first, and I made a connection. I decided early on that I needed help. It says in When We Do Recover. When? When? At the end of the road. Not 15 years old for me, or a quarter mile back, or 2 years into college I didn't finish. Went at the end of the road. I get end of the road. That language speaks to me. The language in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous in the program is perfect for a person with my disease. First thought wrong. As I'll translate for you, the lens I use to look at the world is cloudy and cracked and very narrow. First thought wrong, 10th thought wrong, 15th thought, I want to punch him in the face. No, he's a police officer, walk away. Or my wife who says, just be calm and be nice today. My first thought is, wrong. And my second thought, I'm irritated because she thought of it first. She's got 16 years clean and she's a goddess. And she helps me become a better parent and father than I ever saw at home. Because of you, N.A., consistency. Consistently having patience with a guy who talks first, thinks second, apologizes way later. I'm not the dad I had. So my boy is not the son I was. Because I'm the man I'm allowed to become. And that is a daily basis. You know how beautiful kids are. They're our greatest natural resource. Your kids are my kids. My child is your child. We share children. A lot of times in NA, that's a different meaning. We share children. But that was my second thought, actually. My first one was creepy. And yeah. Somebody will come up to me in public and say, hey, is your first name Mark? And my first thought is, why? What'd you hear? What happened? What's a kid's name? I don't know, really. The irony of the disease is, for me, I was put into a blackout through punishment and abuse. After that, shortly after that, at 7 years old, I chose to go into a blackout through chemical abuse. Blackouts were attractive. Well, it's what I knew. The consistency with which NA has allowed me to develop my gift, my skill, my graceful place. My place of grace in this universe was predetermined. I just have to step into it every day. And here's how beautiful kids can be to teach us. I've learned more from my son than I've ever taught him, you know. Truth be told, my wife and I and Grayson, that's the four-year-old that we raised, it's our kid, and the three of I'm the third funniest person in my house. That's irritating to me. But I've surrendered. My occupation stays at the front door when I come home. You know? My job when I come home, you can ask my boy, what's our job today? Take care of mama all day. He's four and he already knows that one. I'm 52 and I forget it now. I'll tell you what years of clean time does. And I don't care if it's 5, 25, 55. Every year of clean time that I add to that resume I have for Narcotics Anonymous gives me fewer excuses to misbehave. That's all it does. And at a bunch of years clean, it means I'm closer if I choose to forget who I am for an instant and follow first thought wrong, which can be long and strong first thought. I'm about to have the most expensive relapse I've ever had. What do you got to lose today? The beauty of NA for me, consistently, as I surrender every morning to a God of my understanding, is that I don't have to do this even half right. I don't know what's right or wrong all the time, but I know what works. And I know what doesn't work. Sometimes, if you're new, I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but I'll give you a shortcut. You don't got to work three steps to figure this one out. Sometimes, the opposite of first thought is a good place to start. Don't skip a meeting. Don't raise your hand. Don't raise your voice when you're afraid. Because here, volume doesn't substitute for message. You don't have to be loud to be important in Narcotics Anonymous. You don't have to be visible here to matter. You don't have to be seen to make a difference. Do you know how many people it took to put this convention on? I don't. I wasn't one of them. But I get to play for 4 days because they work for 2 years. And my first thought is, what a great job they did. I said my first thought was, what a great job they did. And someday they'll discover the wonders of a two-sided badge. How hard was that, really? Seriously? Oh, we can do just one. All right. Now, my second thought, I thought that, I swear that was my first thought, was, really, people? How long you been doing this, man? Because I want to be critical of you. I don't want to be similar. I want to be separate, unique, isolated, and diseased. Because it gives me an excuse to fail. And failure's attractive to me. I understand it. I get it. I think the reason it took me so long to hit a bottom is because I settled for so many years. It was gravity. It was physics. This world dictates if you settle long enough, you're going to land on the bottom. Crappy job, terrible relationships, poor choices in hell. I settled. Where else would I go? The bottom, you know? So my boy, he just reminded me, the guy upstairs went, get back to the story. He talks to me all day. I don't always listen because he speaks softly like a quiet, confident man. My God is great opportunity daily. I've seen it every day I've been clean. I don't always step into that place of grace. I don't always speak well for NA. I don't always do the husband or the father or the man thing particularly well. Because I'm an addict first by nature. I'm an addict. That means there are certain things in the title that you already know. Financially irresponsible, spiritually retarded, socially awkward, vocabularily challenged, you know, morally flexible. I'm open-minded at certain times. But I have the gift of being able to command the attention of a room because God gave me a special gift. And when it's your turn, I try to listen. But it's not my first thought. See, if you're new, shortcut number two for you. Recovery is not the disappearance of defects or the absence of hurdles. It's the reoccurrence of instantaneous insanity. All the time. Depending on my spiritual condition, it can happen so quick. I'm in the middle of the fourth sentence before I realize that the first three were absolutely brutally harsh. And that's with people I love. I'll argue with my wife because she's right a lot, you know? And there's some guys who still didn't get that one. They're like, all right, continue. We're listening. Yes, sir. Wait. She's right or not? Yeah. First Thought Wrong tells me that I've been clean longer. I'm older. I'm me. Right? I know. You laugh. I don't get the joke. Right? Okay. Three good reasons so far. Right? If you're a man, I'll tell you this. Having more clean time than your mate, and I don't care what sexual orientation you pursue, he doesn't. The disease doesn't. I don't care about color or finance, romance, circumstance, NA dance. I don't care about any of that stuff. I will tell you this. I've learned from something I can't stand. I detest the disease and its results. I love the addict who suffers through it because I understand the parallel path. But this disease is more open-minded than some of us who have it. That's what's comforting for me. I can learn from something I can't stand. And that means some people, places, things, experiences, events. My boy is 4, like I said, and he never says the word today. He says, this day. You want to go to the park after lunch? This day, Dad. Because if I want to keep it real simple, I'll do it like I'm putting the lid down on a jar for you here. You ever spin the lid down on a jar and it don't work? Got to go backwards first a little bit to get the right groove, and then it's simple. I go backwards to childhood. I go backwards to surrender. I go backwards to 1, 2, 3. I go backwards to humility. Not my first thought, but that's where I need to be to do the job. Today will be tomorrow at some point. Tomorrow will be another today. Yesterday was yesterday's today. Today repeats itself. There's no day like this day. This day, Dad. What if we lived just for this day instead of just for today? That's how simple I need to keep it. Because if I was 4 in this fellowship, you wouldn't be listening to me right now. But I'd still have something to say. You can be one day clean and have something to add to this fellowship. You're invited. You're already a member, full-fledged. There's no initiation process. You've paid your dues to keep that seat. Will you continue to pay the dues to keep that seat? That's a question, not a judgment. For me, that was a huge question early on. I'm special, right? Well, I don't know anybody who wasn't born special. The question put to me was, Mark, are you willing to do the work here to become unforgettable? When you and I walk into a room, it changes. Sometimes forever. Sometimes one time we meet each other. Just this day. And we never forget. This day. He's taught me more than I've ever taught him repeatedly about surrender. I surrendered to cocaine and drugs that were bright, shiny objects, you know, that chemical pursuit of happiness, right? I surrendered to the criminal justice system, and I surrendered to bosses, and I surrendered to my father. I surrendered to my mother. I surrendered all the time. Surrender was not a foreign concept, but surrendering to something that was going to be consistently healthy and beneficial for me, I didn't trust it. Foolproof. I see it all the time with you. There are men in this room I would absolutely, I almost said die for it. That's not true. Sorry, Chris, I love you, but no. My sponsors in this room, at least one of my sponsees in this room, I got 2 fellow brother sponsees in this room who have the same sponsors I do. I got men in this room I would literally kill for. I wouldn't want to get caught or do time, but I would kill for those guys. Right? But the 2 people in my life I would die for tomorrow. And this is easy to say until I'm tested, because courage is selective in my world. In 1988, when I got clean, courage for me was an Oakland dope deal in an alley on Fruitvale and East 23rd at 2 a.m. That was courageous, man. The extent of my courage today at 52... eating barbecue ribs in a white shirt. That's as brave as I get right there. That's all you're going to see right there. No. I'll have salad. Thank you. But the education I've received here is unparalleled. And our literature perfectly states what we need, that we do recover when at the end of the road. You know? The first line of every reading was no accident. And if you're new, all you got to do is hear the first line of each of the readings. If you chew on that first line, you know, if you want what we have to offer,
and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Now, you can repeat that over and over, ad infinitum, and get every message you need right there. Because it was written for you, for me, for us with this disease. If you want what we have, want, willing, take. If you want, we have the offer, willing to make the effort, then you're ready to take. So, want, willing, take. What does that sound like to you? Yeah! You were capable of want, willing, take. Before you got here, before you met us. This program's designed for our skills. Want, willing, take. It doesn't say give for a long time, you know. That's why we don't go 1 and 12. 1 plus 12 equals 13. That's what it does, you know. Not the way to do that. So I continually take steps to make sure that I'm consistent in my surrender. And the surrender part is this. I don't want to carry the burden of my own disease anymore. Maybe it's because I'm older. Maybe it's because I'm just worn out, you know. A lot of times I'm confused between the concepts of serenity and fatigue. I'm not even kidding, you know. It's time to argue at home and I'm just too tired. I want to make a stand. I want to be a man. I want to ball up and spine hard. And no, not really. What the men in here have shown me, my sponsor and the other guys I was talking about, and guys that I don't sponsor, or guys that aren't my sponsored brothers that don't sponsor me, you know, there's a list of guys I love in this room. And women who've shown me that too, you know. But I've learned from the men because that's who I idolized as a kid, my dad. And as brutal as he was funny. It was just false. And I know he didn't feel good about what he did. But what I've learned from the men in this fellowship is this. The argument I win at home is the one that doesn't happen. How easy is that? It took me 2 years of therapy with her to figure that one out. Honest to God. It took me a year of therapy to say this. So, honey, I heard what you said. Is this where I talk? Or remain silent. Remain silent is a good answer there. Because my strength is words. But it's also my crutch and my anchor toward unhealth and disease and fall back into old behavior and relapse, you know. I think he was perfect in his design of an addict, you know. We do some things incredibly well for the wrong reason, and 180 degrees from first thought, we get to do them for the right reason, do them forever, you know? We're really good at manipulation, so we sponsor people. We're creative and determined and energetic and bright and focused when we feel like it. We can do service together and not get along. We can go back into our families and make a difference in that quiet, confident way that says it is attraction rather than promotion. When I suit up, show up, shut up, grow up, they noticed. I don't mind that my family doesn't like me around or that they don't call because I'm some kind of perceived threat because my family likes me around and knows that I'm no threat. My God's not threatened by your God. My faith is no threat to yours, I hope. And you can be an atheist here and stay clean the rest of your life. That's how flexible this program is. If you're an atheist, God bless you anyway. But great opportunity daily tells me every single 24-hour period of time that I belong, that I have a chance, that I matter, that I'm significant. What are you going to do with all that, Mark? What's the responsibility on your part? The two words that never came out of my mouth when I was new was my part. You know, my part. I learned from you. I learned from those. I'm involved in those. I have no idea what those are. I'm not a service person. In the formal service way. I'm on the road so much that my form of service is probably not recommended for some people. But In 22 years of being clean, I've gone to over 500 jails or prisons. I do 50 presentations a year, minimum, as an H&I instrument of a program that they may not even want to hear from. But I never stop doing that because it's what I can do. And they allow me to talk. Now, I can say a lot in a few words. And I can use too many words to say nothing at all. My wife says to me quite a few times, Mark, too many words. I love the ability and the freedom that this fellowship allows for each of us to be imperfect, to be flawed, to be defective. And every single time that I surrender to a power greater than myself, which can be, food, ego, driving too fast, rage, too many words. There are so many things that I'm flawed with that I have more company in here, you know. If I was just flawed in a couple areas, I'd probably reach maybe 10 or 12 people. But we have so many perfectly broken people in this room alone that somebody gets something today from anybody who speaks from this podium. And I hope you get a turn to do this. Because, truth be told, it is available to us all. If we are all available to it. Open-minded? Yeah. One of the topics I'd love to do for some meeting sometime, some convention is, bang! That sound you heard was your mind closing before the meeting started. Because I'm not judging, I'm just saying, is a phrase I use, it's a creed I have, because I don't want to get caught in judgment. It's hard to walk with dignity when you're sitting in judgment. It's hard to walk with grace down the path when you're sitting in judgment. It's hard to be of service when you're sitting in judgment. And sitting in judgment is where I'm comfortable. Shortcut number 3 for the newcomers. If it's comfortable, don't do it. If it's uncomfortable, sign up right away. How has comfortable worked for you to this point? You know, the way I think got me to Narcotics Anonymous. The way I filter what I think allows me to make a living. I don't use the word work, except in that context right there. Work. I don't work. I make a living because God allowed me to live what I am capable of making. And you are too. You do what you do. I do what I do. We do what we do. And the people that come in after us, the generations of people, the people that we're saving those seats for, the ones that are paying the dues but haven't gotten the reward or the golden ticket yet, we do what we do individually and as a group so that we don't miss any particular personality out there. We have a fantastic program. And we do recover. It says, in recent years, very few addicts have had this last choice. So let me ask you a question. How many chances have you had? How many do you need? New or old? In between? Green? Credit card? Court card? Green card? Greeting card? I don't care how you got here. My sixth thought is this. This is the last time you ever got to have another chance. This is it. I work with sponsees because I was worked with as a sponsee. I learn relationship skills from people who are successful in relationships. I watch newcomers come in and I relate to them, and I didn't have the patience at 10 years clean to deal with you. 15 years clean. I'm going to tell this story because it's rude. And it'll make me look terrible. I don't know how it's going to make me look, but I'm sitting with a bunch of judgmental people who are better than me, so. The part I want to get to quickly is I'm not afraid of what you think today. Past my first thought. Eventually I get to a place of grace where a great opportunity daily has allowed me to participate in a way that's comfortable for me, as long as it's humble for me, you know? The surrender that takes place in my spirit as I go to work. I've never shared this with any group out loud before, ever. But I'm going to tell you, because I decided to tell you sitting right here, right over there. I said, I'm going to say this today, and only because I never think about what I'm going to say before I come up here, unless I forget that I'm not supposed to think about what I'm going to say. Then I focus and obsess about it. Before I go take a stage and make a living, do any kind of presentation or use words that I hope are effective for a group of people who are great listeners, I say, thank you, God, for the opportunity to share the gift you have allowed me to develop, display, and enjoy, because I'm clean. Every time I go to do what I do, I say that little teeny prayer. I've been saying that prayer for almost 22 years. Every time. Now, at this point in the presentation, you understand that I'm flawed, fragile, vulnerable, emotional, certainly. I didn't shed a tear for 29 years. Not one. You'd never see me cry. I've been saving it up. I've learned how to be a respectful member here, but not immediately. At 16 years clean, I was at a meeting in it was in Indiana, and I believe it was Evansville. I'm not sure. Yeah, that's what I thought. And it was an NA meeting where there were about 8 people, and the guru in the room had, I don't want to exaggerate, 16 months clean. That was the big swinging deal in the room, right? And they were using pagers in the room, and phones, and smoking in a non-smoking room. And man, my judgment meter was on 12 on a 10 scale. I could not fathom what this is. Narcotics Anonymous? Really? Well, evidently, Mark, because you're in a meeting, it was in the schedule, you showed up, you got 16 years clean, and I didn't know what I know now. What I know now is, if I don't see something attractive in a meeting, maybe it was my turn to bring it and I'm too arrogant, or I'm too forgetful, or I'm too full of myself, or I'm too distracted. My basic nature is attraction to distraction. So I sat in that meeting and they said, how about our visitor from California, you want to talk? I said, yeah, I sure do. And I took a 16-year coin out of my pocket, because I used to carry them back then. I don't carry coins anymore. Not because I don't want one, but I just don't carry the coin, you know? I'll wear the medallion everywhere. And if I'm on press, radio, or films, I put it under my shirt. That's just me. I slammed the coin down on the table. I said, that's a 16-year clean time coin. You can look at it if you want, but don't none of you touch it. You ain't clean enough to soil my coin. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding you. Yeah, how do you like me right now? Seriously. I told my sponsor about that. He said, so what message did you send? And my first thought was, I was looking for a new sponsor anyway, really. Maybe this is the time to make that shift, right? I didn't surrender a thing in that meeting. What I did was I brought arrogance from California. My message was, I don't even speak well for my home group, or somebody who's 16 years is still insane. We're rude. Thanks for gracing us with your presence, old-timer, cranky dude that you are. Geez, I can't wait to see what kind of hope I have at 16 years there. Wow. Not even experience or strength, man. You sure you're not loaded, medicated, something? Hey, sit down, California bipolar. We're done. That's all you get, right? The message I was carrying was arrogance and influence that was unnecessary. I don't want to be a bully. I don't curse at meetings. You haven't heard me curse today. It's not because I don't believe in it. I love colorful language. I love it. And colorful is one of those words that the TV people use. You know, you're not going to use any adult language, are you? I might.
parenting, negotiation, conflict, commitment, relationship. Those are adult words, aren't they? And they go, you know what I mean. Yeah, I know what you mean. I just don't know what you mean, you know? For me to curse at this level is either lazy or afraid. I'm too lazy to pick up a better word, or think of a more creative way to express myself. Or I'm too afraid that my message isn't strong enough, so I got to beat you over the head with it. Something sharp or incendiary or very scary, you know, it's something. So I won't curse at an NA meeting. And what I've learned is, I think it helps people, in a way, create their own vocabulary. You know, I learned that from dealing with my wife. My wife, at one point, I'm going to shorten this. She was upset. She was upset because at a certain point of the year, I spent too much money on a business thing. That's all I'm going to tell you. She said, we don't have that kind of money. And my first thought was wrong. My second thought was wronger. My third thought was, why don't you dig into that coach purse there and tell me how much we got. And she goes, so you're going to get crispy with me. And I could feel the hard drive crash in my head. Just crispy? She goes, see, here's your problem, Mark. Now, right there, it's not a good way to get my attention. But she has license to do that. I've told her things I've never told another human being. Because it's personal. Yeah. I said, crispy? She goes, see, that's your problem, Mark. You use words for a living, but where you're living, you don't always use the right words. Oh, man, I want to slit her neck and watch her bleed into the shower. You creepy lady, I will never give you any of this ever again, I swear to God. I didn't say that because she would have been like, ooh, punish me, wow. Yeah. Ooh, hold it back, I can't live without it. Bring the magic wand, princess. So shortcut number four for the newcomers is if you filter first thought wrong, you have a chance. You have an option. You know? My opinions are my own. They're valuable to me. I know, literally know what works. The problem with disease of first thought wrong and being perfectly broken, guided from God towards health and want to go towards misdirection and unaffection and doing the wrong thing and bad GPS towards sabotage of success and not monogamous relationship and all that stuff I'm predisposed to like and be comfortable in is that I have to filter consistently. But the more I work the steps, the fatter that filter gets. Ego, testosterone, fatigue will clog the filter. So that stuff leaks out that's nobody's business and really hard to apologize for. But here's the hope. And we get that in Narcotics Anonymous. We go from dope to hope here. We become hope dealers here. So I'll leave you with this. As long as you've been alive, as many chances and opportunities, great opportunities daily that you've had, how much longer are you going to wait for permission to be exceptional? We go from ex-con, ex-felon, ex-junkie to extraordinary.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, my name is Mike. I'm an addict. Yeah, I can relate to Mark, especially with the wife stuff. My first wife and I, we'd get these discussions, and What kept them going is we both wanted to get the last word in. But I finally figured out how I could get the last word every time. Just put my head down and say, yes, dear. Okay, at this time, I'd like to thank Denise and Mark for speaking. And close up the meeting, I'd like to call on Todd R. from Colorado to come and read We Do Recover.
I'm Todd. I'm an addict. I think I finally found where I belong. I got 9 days clean today. This is real uncomfortable, so I better do it. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious, program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Right on. So glad you're here.
Me too, Dad.
Thank you, Todd. Now that's what it's all about. Yeah, I surrendered to my disease on October 6, 1985. On October 7th this year, I'm going to have 26 years clean. So at this time, I'd like us to join in a circle and close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Okay, still a lot of room over to the left-hand side here. Take a step to your left a bit. Okay, let me just get down and join the circle, and then we can start.